This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Knowledgeable. Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest. If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Poole got inside Bertans. Shot puts it up. Beats the buzzer. The Golden State Warriors outscore them by 10. They'll review. Let's watch it again.
He got this off in plenty of time.
Indeed he did.
Kevin Harlan, Reggie Miller, I believe, on the call last night. Didn't watch a lot of game one of the Western Conference Finals. Watched the first half, Brendan, and then was gonzo. They did a great job. I thought Wiggins was outstanding in the first half in particular. Took Curry and Thompson a little while to get going, but they got incredible balanced scoring. The Warriors did. Seven players, including Otto Porter Jr., who was back on the bench and coming off it last night. And they rolled another blowout NBA playoff game in this 2022 postseason. A 25-point win for Golden State in Game 1. Luka Doncic held to just 20 points on the night. 6 of 8 shooting, and they were running everybody at him in the first half. And at halftime, it was a solid Golden State 9-point lead, and it didn't appear as if Dallas would make a run in the second half, and they didn't. And Golden State pulled away, and they win Game 1. Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Marcus Smart apparently will be back, although there's still some questions about whether or not Al Horford will be back. Good morning to everybody. You know, yesterday's news about James Bradbury signing in Philadelphia, we're going to get to that in detail because a lot of you are really peeved. A lot of you are mad. You're angry that Washington's free agency offseason has been so bland, which is true. It has been. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that, and I'll let you guys weigh in as well. Philadelphia certainly has upgraded their team. They have added now A.J. Brown, James Bradbury, Hassan Redick, Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean in the draft. And they already had a decent roster. You could argue the best offensive line in the division, a talented defense in the division. The big question, of course, with Philadelphia is the quarterback. Last year, it was the quarterback and the head coach and the staff. This year, maybe more just about the quarterback. Philadelphia, though, inching its way up the odds ladder when it comes to the NFC East. A lot of people believing Philadelphia will really push Dallas in the division. Not much talk, in part because of the offseason that Washington has had about your debut season for the Commanders in the division, even though you could argue they made the most significant acquisition of the offseason in the division. We're going to get into that in more detail later on this hour and certainly next hour. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post, he covers the team. He'll join us at 7 a.m. A little bit later on in the show, Michael Lee from the Post. We'll talk some NBA with him. And before we get to either one of those two gentlemen, Scott Van Pelt from Tulsa, Southern Hills, where the PGA Championship tees off here in about 2 hours. In fact, the first group off, former champions, John Daly, Sean McKeel, and Y.E. Yang. Daly still shows up for the PGA Championship every year. He won it in 91 at Crooked Stick, and he's been a legend in the game ever since. It's always interesting to see what Daly shows up and looks like. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth. How about that as a pairing at 9-11 this morning? Is that 9-11? I'm looking at the scores right now. Are they Eastern Standard Time? Are the tee times at 7 a.m.? Because for whatever reason, I thought I read that Tiger, Rory, and Spieth were 8-11 a.m. And it's showing 9-11 a.m. right here. That wouldn't even be the Central Standard Time. That would 7-11 a.m. would be the, or 6-11 a.m. would be if or 7-11 a.m. would be if
it's 9-11
if 8-11. It's 9-11 Eastern.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the Eastern Standard Time. Okay, good. So when this show is over, I can sit back and watch Tiger, Rory, and Jordan go out together. That's a hell of a pairing. And the great thing about the PGA is you get the coverage pretty much right from the jump all day. There's no hidden coverage. There's no paid coverage necessarily, although I'm sure there is on ESPN Plus for groups. But you get a lot of television. And the course is apparently spectacular. And we'll talk to Scott about that in about 25 minutes. Scott will join us from Tulsa. The players are raving about Southern Hills, where they have held many a major championship before. And it is a tough course where the expected winning score, I think, will be in the single digits under par. But we'll ask Scott about that. So Scott Van Pelt coming up, Sam Fortier, Michael Lee, all on the show today. Nats got a win last night to snap their losing streak. Ruiz had a 10th inning RBI double to win it over the Marlins 5-4. Now, I believe there was a kind of a controversial ending for the Marlins on a tag up where their runner on third left a little bit early and it counted as the final out. But the Nats win 5-4 over the Marlins to snap what was for them a three-game losing skid after they hammered the Astros on Saturday afternoon. Let's get to a what do you got?
All right, all right, all right.
What do you got?
So Deshaun Watson is testifying in this, you know, I guess the civil portion of the 22 different cases. He's going to eventually stand trial in 22 different cases. But last week he testified in one of the pretrial depositions for one of the women that have made these claims. Her name is Ashley Solis. It's a testimony that she brought. She was the first therapist to go public with her claims. And she claimed that he used his his actual genitals and rubbed them on her during the massage, and it made her cry. So Watson was asked to testify in this pretrial deposition about the massage that ended with the therapist crying. Watson admitted that he sent her an apology via text message. The text message read, "Sorry about you feeling uncomfortable. Never were the intentions. LMK, let me know if you want to work in the future. My apologies." He was asked why he sent an apology, and Watson testified, "Because she was teary-eyed, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. So I assume that she was uncomfortable for whatever reason. And we talked about working in the future. And so I said, we can work in the future, just let me know. And then I sent my apologies as whatever reason she was teary-eyed for. With no court order in place preventing the deposition transcripts from being disseminated to reporters, the lawyers can share any, some, or all of the information. That specific testimony was provided by the attorney, Tony Busby, who represents all 22 of the massage therapist plaintiffs. Now, that report came out after multiple reports indicate the NFL is set to meet with Watson this week. This will be the first sit-down between Watson and the league. The league has a lot to do in this general area to resolve whatever the disciplinary action will be, and whether or not it will start this year. Because I think it was Sam Monson, who we had on the other day from Pro Football Focus, who suggested that there's conversation that Watson won't face any discipline this year, that these 22 cases need to get resolved before, from a civil standpoint, before the league will weigh in with a discipline. And it's very possible that the 2022 season is a full season for Deshaun Watson. That seems crazy to me. Already, you know, you will have probably enough information, I would think, that the league could gather for conduct detrimental at the very least. So we'll see. It might benefit Deshaun Watson in some ways to take discipline prior to these civil cases being, you know, settled. Although I guess there's nothing barring, it's not like double jeopardy when it comes to the league and its disciplinary action. It's not like they can't discipline twice. They could discipline Watson this year with a few games and then wait for all of these 22 civil cases to be settled, which may not happen until early next year, and then discipline him again if it's required. I don't know the direction it's going in. We should probably ask Neil in Rockville. We should probably ask Neil or somebody like Neil to see, you know, whether or not the NFL, it's in their best interest, legally and otherwise, to wait on a disciplinary action with Watson. Interesting times, though, because we're going to start to, as these civil cases start to unfold, we're going to probably hear many a detail and perhaps even learn about what some of these settlements are. Some of these settlements could be telling, although with somebody who just signed a $230 million contract, it's very possible they'll just want it to go away. But the NFL has begun its investigation to determine whether or not Watson violated that code of conduct detrimental before the 22 civil lawsuits have taken place. As we know, by the way, we've had multiple grand juries now that have chosen not to indict Watson on criminal charges, and Watson continues, as he has from the beginning, to deny any wrongdoing. So we'll see how this one plays out. This is big, obviously, for, you know, the women, for starters, of course, but for the Cleveland Browns, who signed him to a $230 million fully guaranteed contract after acquiring him from Houston. He, by the way, I want to find where I read this. I want to say that there was a story maybe over the weekend, Brendan, that he was taking a bunch of his teammates to the Bahamas to work out and kind of treat it as a bonding weekend. I think he was paying for that, and that may have already taken place with their OTA scheduled to start next week. Cleveland's schedule includes Washington, as we know, but not until the next to last week of the season. So I guess, you know, the disciplinary action could take place at any point based on the civil proceedings. And I don't know if he's going to be playing football and also during the week participating in these civil cases. I would assume that perhaps they will wait until after the season. Cleveland, it was Sam Monson the other day from Pro Football Focus who said that Cleveland is one of his super kind of, you know, surprise sleeper picks. I think a lot of people feel Cleveland could be really good with Watson this year. They open up with Carolina and the Jets, and then Pittsburgh at home on a Thursday night, and then the Falcons on the road. Panthers, Jets, Steelers with Kenny Pickett more likely than not, and Falcons. That's the Cleveland start to the schedule. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, you are thinking, if we've got Deshaun Watson and he's not suspended early, we got a chance. You also have to wonder whether or not the NFL did Cleveland some kind of favor to schedule four teams that are expected to struggle. Yeah, Pittsburgh's not really expected to be very good if they end up starting a rookie quarterback. And they've got four easy games on paper if, in fact, Watson isn't scheduled to play. I don't know how you'd want that to work. Would you want your team at full strength? It's full strength for the games that you're supposed to win. Maybe that's the better way, so you get those wins without giving up maybe two of them. What do you think of Cleveland this year, Brendan? Do you like them? People seem to really like them.
I think if we knew that Watson was playing the full year, we'd be a lot higher on him. But because just even the way the contract was structured, in that Watson's only getting paid a base of $1 million, it kind of seems like even the agent knew he was going to get suspended for some period of time.
Right, of course.
So with that in mind, it's tough to kind of be really high on him, because you have to imagine they're not going to go to Baker Mayfield. And if you go to Jacoby Brissett, you're kind of setting a max ceiling of like 7-8 wins if he has to play the full year. And, you know, if he has to play 8 games, like 3 or 4 wins maybe. So with that in mind, like I want to be high, because I like Amari Cooper. I like Deshaun Watson is a top 5 quarterback when he's healthy and he's playing and he's not, you know, distracted with whatever is going on off the field. He's a top 5 quarterback, and they've got one of the best overall talent pools in the league. Their roster is really good.
Yeah, defensively in particular.
So they should on paper be good. It's just, it really all comes down to how many games Watson plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely comes down to how many games Watson plays. I was really referring to kind of the overall roster after quarterback. What would be interesting is if he were suspended early in the year, I mean, what are the odds right now it'll be Mayfield? I mean, he doesn't seem to be, that enthused about being a part of this team. But right now, he has no other choices. He's on that roster. Nobody wanted him. Literally, nobody wanted him. But I do think, you know, if Watson plays, you know, we had so many of these conversations over the last really 2 off seasons. What would Watson mean to, you know, a Washington? What would Russell Wilson mean to a Washington? We talked, obviously, too, about Stafford and Rodgers. The bottom line is they mean a hell of a lot. I mean, Russell Wilson, you know, right now with Denver is expected to be a contender in the AFC and has as many primetime appearances as any team in the league. And with Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, the Browns certainly are going to get some preseason love, especially in a division that should see Pittsburgh down. Baltimore healthier should be, you know, thought of as a contender. And then you've got the Super Bowl runner-ups in Cincinnati in that division. Anyway, so I went through an exercise yesterday that I wanted to kind of share with everybody, which was kind of looking for, you know, we touched on the rankings defensively and offensively. I made a comment during the show yesterday that I'm not sure Washington's defense right now isn't the worst defense, at least on paper, going into the 2022 season. Many of you took exception to that. But when you really look at the rosters and you look at the question marks defensively about the four teams in the division, Washington perhaps has more than any of the other three teams. I want to talk a little bit about where they rank in a very intense analytical study by Seth Walder at ESPN, a predictive study, as they refer to it, for the 2022 season. How good or how bad is Washington's defense supposed to be in 2022? I'll have the answer for you when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
So yesterday on the show, and I forget, we were taking calls, and I said, I made an offhanded comment. I said, you know, and I don't know that I had thought about it that much. I know I've thought about offensively Washington's skill position group being right there with everybody in the division now, probably right there with Philadelphia, maybe even better than Dallas's skill position group, you know, taking the quarterback out of the equation, taking even the offensive line out of the equation, because Washington's offensive line is not as good as Dallas's or Philadelphia's offensive line. It could be, and it'll be very well coached. I think Matsko, and I've mentioned this before, may be the position coach that I'm most confident in. And they've got a couple of them that are good. Don't get me wrong. But Matsko's done some a pretty damn good job here in the first two seasons. And so even though they lost their most talented offensive lineman in Brandon Scherff and replaced him, and by the way, Eric Flowers, with two new guards, including Andrew Norwell, I have confidence that he'll coach him up and it'll be an acceptable group. It'll be a solid group. I believe that. But Philadelphia has an outstanding offensive line. Dallas has a very good offensive line. The Giants have obviously worked hard on improving their offensive line in recent years. That's not really what this conversation's about. I just wanted to point out, before I got to the negative, that I do think Washington offensively has really, you know, improved the skill position and supporting cast around its quarterback. And even if Carson Wentz isn't the best quarterback in the division, which I don't think he is, who knows, he might be the second best quarterback in the division, but that Washington, from a skill position standpoint offensively, is pretty damn good and pretty comparable to the other teams in the division. And this is why we had the conversation yesterday, and most of you agree. In fact, 63 or 64% of you via the poll agree that you're more confident in the offense going into 2022 than you are in the defense. And that is quite the change from a year ago. Major change. You know, what a difference a year makes. Last year, we're totally confident about the defense, even with the schedule they're going to face. I mean, even those of us that pointed out from the jump, look at the quarterbacks they're going to face. We're still pretty excited about what the defense was developing into and what it could become. You know, and even if it took a step back statistically in 22, this was a defense that was being built for years to come. But last year, it disappointed in a major way. And so a year later, here we are with major concerns about the defense and its future. And many are much more optimistic about the offense. So during one of the calls yesterday, I said, you know, defensively now, it's not just that we are less optimistic and probably more optimistic about them offensively than defensively. If you look at what Philadelphia has done defensively and where Dallas and the Giants are, you could make the case that Washington going in to 2022 might have the worst defense on paper in the division. Last year, it wasn't even close. Washington's defense was not only the best on paper, but it was the best the year before, and it was thought to be, you know, on the verge of becoming elite. And, you know, after the front four, which you don't have the depth you had last year, you're not even sure who two of your three linebackers are going to be when you're in base defense. You're not really that super confident about them in the secondary. And we will get to Bradberry next hour with Sam Fortier at 7 a.m. But Washington, you know, when you look at what Philadelphia has defensively, especially if they're healthy this year, what Dallas has with the defensive rookie of the year leading them, and really what the Giants have as well defensively, you know, adding Kayvon Thibodeau to go with Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams and Ojulari, who looks like a potential star in the making, not to mention the fact that with their new coaching staff, they added a pretty damn good, effective defensive coordinator in recent years, Wink Martindale. From Baltimore. So we started to look for various early, you know, kind of so-called expert predictions for offensive and defensive strength for next year. And we found a couple that had Washington rated pretty low defensively. And then I found this yesterday because it had come out the day before on Tuesday, late Tuesday. And it was the Seth Walder Football Power Index. This isn't the rankings of the teams, you know, the power rankings, which people like John Keim participate in, you know, all of the beat reporters participate in. It's more of a voting of all of the beat reporters. And John's explained to me kind of what goes into, you know, determining the ESPN NFL power rankings. But this is the Seth Walder, head of the analytics division at ESPN, his annual football power index. I'm not going to get into what goes into it because for many of you, it'll sail right over your head. But I'm just going to give you the results of it. First of all, in terms of overall ranking of teams this year in the Football Power Index, it's a predictive rating. Seth Walder concluded that Washington's got the 20th best team in the NFL. Buffalo's 1, Green Bay's 2, the Rams are 3, the Chiefs are 4, the Bucks are 5. Cowboys come in 6, Chargers are 7, the Indianapolis Colts with Matt Ryan are 8. The Cardinals are 9. The Browns, who we've been talking about this morning, are 10. The next NFC East team is Philadelphia at 18. The Commanders are at 20, and the Giants are at 22. Now, if you're wondering if the Commanders are in the top 7 of NFC teams, of the weak NFC, they're not. They're 9th. The Packers, the Rams, the Buccaneers, the Cowboys, the Cardinals, the Vikings, the Eagles, and Saints. Those 8 teams come in with a higher football power index for 2022 than Washington, which is about where we've discussed where they are without all of the predictive modeling that Seth Walder provides. But what I really wanted to get to was, well, where was Washington's defense ranked for 2022? Last year, it was super high. Last year, the defensive number for Washington going into the season was not as high as a lot of people had it, but higher than they are this year. And I'm looking for that number, and I forget where it is. But whatever. The defensive number for this year, he's got Washington as the 26th, tied for the 26th best defense in the NFL. Tied with the New York Football Giants. He's got the Eagles defense ranked ahead of it. Not super high. Philadelphia's defense ranked at 23rd, and he's got Dallas's defense ranked at number 6 overall. So the perception in this, you know, at least based on this information, and we will see between now and training camp, another 50 sort of predictive, ranking the defenses, ranking the offenses, ranking special teams, ranking the coaching staffs, ranking the teams. We'll see all of that before training camp. I just wanted to search out what somebody outside of this place, this town, is thinking about Washington defensively. And they've got them tied for the 26th ranked defense in the NFL. And so right there is someone that would say, yeah, I agree with you. Dallas and Philadelphia's defense is better, and the Giants are right there with Washington defensively. There was something else that I looked at, and I'll share with you a little bit next hour. And that is, last year, remember, we spent a lot of time talking about the offenses that Washington's defense was going to face. All of those quarterbacks, the great quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, etc. This year, now that we're more optimistic about the offense, what about the defenses the offense is going to face? Next hour, I'll get to that based on the Seth Walter rankings to tell you if Washington's offense is going to face really good defensive teams, projected good defensive teams, or projected bad defensive teams. I'll give you a hint. The results are kind of mixed, but there's something about these results that's really, really enticing if you think Washington's offense has a chance to feast next year on its schedule. We'll get to that after Sam Fortier. When we come back, Scott Van Pelt will be our guest. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Pelt joined me on my podcast yesterday. He's down at Southern Hills, site of the PGA Championship, which gets underway at 8 a.m. this morning. Tiger's there. Phil isn't. The players apparently love Southern Hills. That's where I started asking him about Southern Hills and the venue for this PGA Championship.
It's fantastic. I walked the front nine on Monday with Brian Harmon. I walked the back nine yesterday with it was a fun group. It was Max Homa, a guy named Taylor Gooch, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, and it's just visually I think it's fun to look at because Gil Hance, who's the golf course architect, came in here about 3 years ago and kind of redid some things. The creeks are more pronounced. The bunkers are more pronounced. So just what you're looking at visually, I think it presents itself well. And it's a big ballpark. It's a big golf course. They've taken off the rough from around the green so that it's all runoff. And so it's almost in some ways reminiscent of, like, say, a Pinehurst in that way.
Right.
But the greens aren't Pinehurst because Pinehurst greens, as people listening that are golf fans know, are like these upside-down saucers. So it almost repels a shot, even one that might be hit pretty well. It's not like that here. If you hit a good shot, you're going to stay on greens. But if you hit a poor shot and it's running, it's going to run through. So short game is going to be massively important here this week because you're not going to hit all these greens because it's supposed to be windy. It's hot now, but it's going to be on the weekend like in the 60s, which is odd. By the way, I said it's going to be 97 at home on Sunday.
Yeah, 97.
Or Saturday?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Very hot.
That's no good at all. But it's big. You always talk about score and, like, with the win, you don't know. No one's ever got to double digits here. This is the eighth major they've had. And I think somebody could, because I think someone, these guys are so good, Kevin, if somebody shot, you know, 64, you know, even 63. I mean, would I be shocked if someone did that? No, that's what these guys do. But if it gets windy and it gets, the greens do get a little bit faster, which they could because they dry out quick when the humidity's gone, then it'll be a massive battle.
Well, what do you think what is the projected winning score this week?
No clue. I mean, like I said, talking to Andy, I mean, this is all just sort of the kind of, like, for instance, I had a talk yesterday with a guy named Scott Verplank, who, of course, is a well-known name from, who's not on the tour now, but played for many, many years, lives about an hour away and has played here a bunch. In fact, I think in 2007 on the weekend, he might have been in the group with Tiger on Saturday, but Plank played well in 07. But he was, you know, we were having this conversation. I said, you think somebody could shoot this? And he said, well, sure. But he said, the wind's the great unknown, because when the wind blows and the temperature drops, because it's like 90 today, but when it gets to the 60s, as Scott said, the humidity goes away, the greens do get quickly. And then all of a sudden, anything under par becomes really hard to find. So I think whatever Tiger shot in 2007, I want to say it was 7 or 8, most of it was done in one round. He shot a 63 and had one round of that. So almost all the damage was done in one day. So I keep thinking somebody's going to shoot 10, but I could be completely wrong if the weather's not conducive to shooting something in the 60s.
That was his only round of 63 in a major, right?
That sounds right. That sounds right.
What are you,
63 forever is the lowest one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What are you expecting from him this weekend? That's what a lot of people want to know.
I mean, anything I say is a guess, because the last time we saw him, he was shooting 78-78 at Augusta on the weekend, and did it with a smile, because, you know, I think it represented some significance, and we haven't seen him since then. And so I don't know how you can possibly know. My understanding is he's a little better physically. I mean, he's maybe a little stronger. But this walk's no treat either. It's not Augusta, but, I mean, there's some significant hills. I mean, it's called Southern Hills for a reason. After that first tee, I was joking the other day when I was walking with Brian Harmer. I said, I just want to lay down and roll down the hill. It seems like it'd be easier. It's like,
it's straight. Downhill. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like it's elevated tee, and you walk straight down a very steep hill off of one tee. But, I mean, the thing, like, for instance, the last time we saw Jordan Spieth, he played at Augusta, he missed the cut. Well, then he won at Harbortown, he finished second last week in Texas. So you have some idea of where he is. Well, we haven't seen Tiger since the Masters, so what do I expect? When I say, well, I think he'll do this, I don't have a frigging clue. So, I mean, I'm happy to say something if you want me to make it up, but
well, I don't want you
don't
to make it up.
Anyone could answer.
But
well,
I,
but how yeah. can I answer that question when I have no idea? I haven't seen him and I don't know.
Okay, I still think it was a decent question and one that people would want the answer to, even if the answer is you don't know.
No. I'm not faulting your question.
I know you're not.
I'm telling you.
But here's
I'm telling you, I don't have an answer for your question. I have no answer.
Here's the thing that we know, don't we? I mean, he could injure himself again this weekend, and there could be a back injury or something. But it does appear, given that there was speculation that he might not play this, and now all of a sudden
That's
there's
true.
Talk that he might play the Memorial, that Tiger, for what we, you know, Tiger's back to a certain degree, isn't he?
Well, he's back playing golf. I mean, like, the whole definition of back is that, I mean, has been all the, you know, it's been Tiger's back. What does that mean? He's back to being Tiger? Like, back to being the Tiger Woods that was the guy that won, like, 7 of 11 majors? No, he's not back, but he's back playing. That's all you can ask for. So, I mean, yes, I'm with you, because when he left Augusta, I thought, you know, maybe he doesn't play again until St. Andrews. But his competitive fire is such that he's not just going to sit around if he's able to do it at all. So I don't know. I mean, I was told that he was very, enthusiastic about, hey man, let's go. I mean, that I know, just in terms of being his appetite to get out there and compete is there. He's not here, again, it's not ceremonial. It's not just because he's got nothing else to do. It's because he wants to try to compete. So I think that's optimistic. And I mean, the golf looked pretty good early at Augusta, and then I think the toll of the weekend, and you know, it was very cool, and the walk and all the rest of it. By Saturday, Sunday, I mean, you know, 78. I mean, I think that's the one time you'll ever see him shoot that and smile walking off a golf course. I don't think he's not here hoping to do that. I know that much, but I just haven't got a clue about what's reasonable to think or what his form is, because we just don't have anything to go off of.
Yeah, I wonder when we will, as golf fans, get to the point where it's not exciting, or we don't think deep down somewhere that he's actually got a chance since he's playing. Like, I hope it's still years from now. I hope we still have like a 3-4-5 year run of Tiger playing enough to think that he's got a chance, because I just think it makes the overall event just much bigger.
Totally agree with that, and I do think that what Phil did last year, winning at 51, I think, or he was about 51, because his birthday's in June. That Tiger's physical fitness, outside of all of these been through in terms of surgeries and all, gives you the hope that you'll get that. That was interesting. I was talking to one of the players about Tiger, and like, what do you think in terms of how long? And I said, I don't know. I think his hunger to compete isn't ever going to wane. But it is a tricky kind of a deal for the game, because there's a ton of players who are exciting and guys that people like to watch. You know, Max Homa, who won in our neighborhood. Yeah. People really like Max. He's a fantastic guy and a likable guy and a guy worth rooting for. And there's so many different types of players like that in the game. But they would be the first to say, none of us are that guy. None of us captivate people's imagination and attention like Tiger. I mean, look, there's a reason why our ratings were what they were for the Masters, and CBS's ratings were what they were. It's because, you know, because he's in the mix. Everyone knows that.
So let's talk about Phil for a moment, because I think a lot of people start paying attention for the majors. And I know this question was asked prior to the Masters, but, you know, he had a chance to play this weekend and defend his PGA championship. In the simplest of terms, for people who haven't been paying attention, why isn't Phil Mickelson playing golf right now?
Well, I can only guess. I mean, he was linked to this Saudi-backed tour. He made comments to an author named Alan Shipnuck, who wrote a biography, unauthorized biography, which I guess came out this week, where he made the comments about the Saudis, and they were pretty, you know, inflammatory. And then he ended up releasing this lengthy statement apologizing to pretty much everybody other than, I guess, the PGA Tour for what he had to say. And then he basically put himself in exile, saying he was stepping away, and he hasn't come back. And so why is he not here this week? Well, I don't know. And is it because he didn't want to have to, as a defending champion, just as Phil Mickelson, he would have had a press conference. Well, had he had a press conference, Kevin, then it would have been packed, and people would have said, what exactly did you mean by all the different things that you said? And then he'd have had to answer them. Putting out a statement is you control the narrative, and you avoid being asked any pointed questions. And my sense is that his appetite to be asked questions about what he had to say is nil, or he'd already done it. And so it creates this fascinating dual storylines, where a year ago at Kiowa, he's the oldest major winner ever. And it was, you know, he's always been a beloved player. And when we left Kiel, Kevin, had you told me that a year later Tiger Woods, who'd just been in this horrific accident, would play at Southern Hills and that Phil wouldn't, I wouldn't have believed either. But both are true. And so at some point Phil will resurface, and I don't know when it will be. Is it gonna be at one of these Saudi events where he's gonna play? because at some point somebody's going to ask him questions about what his story is and what he's doing. But he hasn't answered any questions yet. All he's done is put out a statement.
They're going to ask him about the $40 million reported $40 million in gambling losses during a 5-year period,
among other things.
Among other things. It's weird to me, this situation right now. And this is obviously from afar, but I'll try to explain it as best I can. Phil's always struck me as a guy that, you know, has all the answers and is rarely wrong in his own mind. And this just seems to me like, people are getting, you know, essentially forced into exile for just a lot worse than what he said or what he was contemplating with respect to the Saudi tour or any of the other stuff that's in this book. And I guess my feeling is it's like really weird that he hasn't just stepped up and faced the music and explained it away the way he believes he can explain it away, where he gets very philosophical in sort of his answers and explains as a guy that, you know, kind of comes off as a guy that thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room. And yet what is true right now is what you said. He's in exile.
But and right, so here's what I don't know. Is that self-imposed? Did the tour ask him to sit down for some period of time and suspend him? If so, for what? Like, over what would he have been suspended? It seems like that's the thing, is that there's these questions you don't know. I mean, it seems like he stepped away. I mean, he said he was stepping away to work on, I don't know the exact wording, something about to try to be a better this, that, and the other thing. And okay, and look, somebody's playing on this tour, and Lee Westwood was asked some questions about it, and he explained how there are a bunch of different sports that compete there, and golf certainly has through the years, and you know there will be players who turn up to play at this event, at these events, I should say. I think the way Phil described them, and talking about the Saudis in general.
Right.
I mean, everyone knows the comments he made to Shipbook. I don't know that those on their own would have, they wouldn't have prevented him from being a defending champion here. But it would have required him sitting down and being asked questions about it. And he didn't want to do it. He didn't put out he didn't say, I'm not playing. He told the PGA on Friday afternoon late, and the PGA of America put the statement out. Right. So it's just, I don't know, it creates a very, it gets curiouser and curiouser, right? I mean, the longer that he says nothing publicly on the on the record, then the more you just are left to wonder, what are we doing here?
Maybe Bunky Perkins has the answer to all of that.
I don't know. Bunky knows where to get a good meal in Tulsa. I know that much.
Yes, smoke. All right, real quickly, who do you like and why? And then give me like a sleeper that people aren't thinking about that you think's got a really good chance.
Well, I think the conversation has to start with Scottie Scheffler for the very simple fact that he's the number one player in the world. The last major was the Masters. He showed up ranked number one and won. And he won when the Big 12 played here back when he was in college, he played an event here, won. He's called this his favorite golf course in the world. I mean, he's that guy, right? I mean, you show up number one at the Masters and win. I mean, that's only ever happened once before. It was Ian Woosnam many years ago. And it's a course where you have history and you say it's your favorite. I mean, sometimes I've said this a lot about this, question when I've been asked. Sometimes, Kevin, I think we work really hard to try to be clever and figure out like a sneaky answer. Sometimes you just say what's obvious, like that. Scottie Scheffler. You start with him. But as I've walked it the last couple of days, and I'm getting ready to head out and take another stroll, I mean, the fairways are massive. If good drivers of the golf ball are gonna play well, good ball strikers are going to play well, and short game is really important. I really like Spieth. Since the Masters, he won at Harbortown, and he finished second last week, and his short game is as clever as any in the world. He can really rely on that, and it would be a tremendous storyline. No one's ever finished the slam with the PGA which is what Spieth now is going to spend the rest of his career trying to do. It wouldn't shock me at all if he were to play well and win. Ball hitters, like guys that really are known for ball striking, a Morikawa, I would expect to play well here. I think Xander Schauffele is a guy who, off last week where he shot 61, very different kind of golf course, but he played great on Sunday, and he's the kind of player I think at some point has to just bust through in a major. A name that probably you're not going to hear said necessarily, but is a really well-regarded player and has some of the things you want to lean into this week, maybe a Daniel Berger. I think Berger's the guy that could play well on this golf course, so I wouldn't call him a sleeper per se. I just don't think you'd hear that name necessarily mentioned on our air or even the Golf Channel beforehand. But if you're in one of those pools and you're picking a guy from this column and that column and the other column, I don't know. I think he's a name that might be a decent name to lean into. I like Harmon too. Now, granted, I just want to be honest. I told Steve this on our podcast. Kevin, whoever I walk with, I see him hit it, and I go, wow, Brian Harmon's good. Yeah. He could play well here. But he drives it great and has played well in majors. He's one of those sneaky guys that you don't think about him, first or last.
He's a little guy, isn't he?
He's not a big guy. We were laughing about, about my height and his height, and we made a good combo. But he's just an awesome dude. Huge sports fan. We had a great walk just talking about sports. And you watch this guy kind of, absent-mindedly. Like, he's doing his work, but we're engaged in conversation the whole time, and I'm trying to make sure I'm not bothering him, right? But you're just watching him, not really grinding seemingly, but just effortlessly hitting fairways and greens and rolling in putts, and you just think, Jesus Christ, these people play a game that is just so astounding, man. And when you see it up close, it just makes you realize that you and your buddies and me and my buddies, I mean, we like to play, but oh my gosh, we don't do anything resembling any of what they do.
So back to Scheffler. So is that our new thing? We're going with the obvious now?
No, I'm just saying that, like...
No, I think with the obvious now is the contrarian move. I think so many people now are on to this, it's too obvious, can't go there. Maybe that's the new contrarianism, is to go with the obvious.
I don't know if it's the contrarian. I think that we all, and by we, I mean people like you and me, Kevin, who spend our time in the content of sports and how presenting it however we do, I think we can sometimes try too hard to figure out something to make us seem smart. And in this case, I'm just saying it isn't necessary. you can point to the guy who's number one, who won the last Masters, who says this is his favorite course, and go, him. Let's start with him. And, okay, we got him? Okay, good. Look, John Rahm's just as obvious. Could he win? Of course. I think I picked him for ESPN.com. I mean, I get asked so many times. By the end of the week, I've told
you've got
somebody
everybody.
The winner somewhere. You know what I mean? So I just think Scheffler maybe isn't the most, you're supposed to have some kind of insight that's beyond the obvious, right? And I don't know that I do here. He's the guy. I mean, and it's amazing how quickly he became that. He's earned those kind of bona fides.
Enjoy this weekend. I will talk to you soon. Thank you for doing this.
It's my pleasure as always. Be well.
PGA Championship, 8 a.m. this morning, the tee time. Tiger and company go off at 9. You'll hear updates on it all day long here on the Team 980. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.